Hello and welcome to this podcast produced by the Northern Region of the University and College Union. My name's John Bryan, and in this episode we're looking back at further education in 2020. We're looking at the impact of the pandemic, the lockdown, the opening of colleges in June, and the wider reopening of further education in September and the autumn term. As we go into 2021, and we're told that there will be a staggered start in 2021 and also testing in further education colleges, we talked to a number of our reps across the region about what this year has been like and what we can expect in the future.
Schools and colleges will need to work with families to secure regular attendance from the start of a new academic year, with the reintroduction of mandatory attendance. If anyone in a nursery, school or college develops COVID-19 symptoms, they can already be tested. But from September, we're going to give all schools and colleges a limited number of home testing kits to give to any children or staff who are unable to get to a testing centre. I'd like once more to thank the fantastic school and college staff, the childminders, the nursery workers and carers, who are all making a return possible.
So what they said is that today, the 17th of December, is that all secondary schools and colleges in England will be able to test more of their staff and students with free coronavirus testing from the first week of January.
Now, in further education, each part of 2020 can be put into different segments. After the initial lockdown in March, we can say that the summer term was very much a term of working from home, learning from home, furlough for a number of staff, and there were a minority of learners and staff who were on site only for the very essential things that needed to be carried out. The summer holidays was characterised by the exams fiasco and government U-turns, when the government eventually went with teacher and lecturer assessed grades. The autumn term, beginning in September, can be characterised as a term of blended learning, some online learning, and social distancing and face coverings in further education colleges. Colleges in campuses looking very different to how people left them in the initial lockdown. As we go into 2021, the government in the final week of term has announced that there will be a staggered start in January, and there will be testing in secondary schools and colleges for COVID-19. Both of those things are not clear how they're going to pan out in each individual institution, but what we wanted to do in this episode of the podcast was look back at the year and how our representatives and members have found it, as well as looking ahead for what might happen in the future in 2021 and indeed in the years after that. I started off by talking to Seamus, Neil and Steve, and I asked Steve first of all about what happened in the initial lockdown and how he found it as a representative of the union and as a member of staff.
We were quite lucky because we did, kind of forewarned is forearmed, and we'd been getting a lot of the learners used to accessing online tools, whether it be the college's native Canvas system or swapping over and using Teams and the like. Also getting the learners to communicate via email and things so that the online teaching would be a little bit easier for the learners to kind of take up. The transition was a little bit odd, just from a personal point of view, because I had two kids at home who were at school, and they had to, they were working from home, but they weren't set a great deal of work from the school. And my own personal thing was that getting into a routine of working from home in an environment that I'd never really done any group teaching. I have a little recording studio at home, and I ran from there, but it was an odd transition. But the support was there from the off. We had regular consultation with senior management, and with me being health and safety rep, I had our health and safety guys knocking on the door and seeing. Who were very, very keen to find out if I was getting any communication with members, UCU members, and also staff members of the problems that they were having with online lessons and things.
And what about yourself, Neil? How was it for you and the communication with management, communication with members? I mean, this is right back in March at the start of the lockdown. What were the sort of issues that you came across?
Yeah, I think it was really quite difficult at the time. I don't think we'd had the sort of preparation that maybe Steve's talking about in terms of sort of trying to transition students to online alternatives, I think. And actually, student engagement was really quite poor. I think they just thought, oh, that's it. So a lot of things kind of that you might have had in mind sort of fell by the wayside a little bit. And it was really just a case of, you know, trying to get students on with work, but then you'd get changes in the guidelines which said, you know, stop them doing any new work. We'll just have to go with, you know, what they've done already. So nobody really knew what was happening. I think in terms of the health and safety side, I think that's always been quite positive. The college engaged with UCU pretty much right from the very start, and we were involved in risk assessment processes in terms of thinking about the planning for ongoing developments as kind of guidance changed and things like that. So, you know, on the one hand, I found the teaching side very difficult, and I felt totally personally unprepared to make that shift online. The students, the same. And obviously, as things progressed, I think everybody's got a better handle on it. But, certainly in the first instance, it was challenging on the one hand. But also on the health and safety aspects, I think the college worked really well with us.
And Seamus, I know at your college, I mean, obviously you will have had some of those issues that both Neil and Steve talked about, but I know at your college, furlough was a particular kind of concern and an issue because a significant proportion of the staff were furloughed. What was your experience of that, having to deal with all of it?
It was definitely a strange time because we knew lockdown was coming. So we all started to make the transition towards Teams, and the work that the staff put in themselves was fantastic. We used to talk to each other on WhatsApp and kind of help each other within our own kind of department. And I thought that was brilliant. And we started teaching online then. I think we were in it about a week, 2 weeks, and then suddenly they furloughed basically our whole school. Including everyone right up to the principal. The principal was the only person in our school who wasn't furloughed. So from that stage, it started to get quite difficult because we're in kind of a unique situation, I guess, because we have a lot of students that are foreign students that have come over. So the students weren't being communicated with either, which was, I think, the worst part of it. The college themselves started to have weekly conversations with us as the union, which was quite good. Some good stuff came from it. A lot of it was us just listening, but we didn't have much choice in that. But the staff themselves, psychologically, it was quite difficult because suddenly you're at home, you're not allowed to do any work that you're supposed to do. You've got students that depend on you, not only for the learning aspect, but obviously the tutorial care as well. So you've got that stress on it as well. And when you're told you can't do any work, I think it was quite a difficult period for everyone involved. They started to bring people back slowly. So they started bringing two people back at a time. And they were told if one person is brought back, another person has to come out. So it was very much restrictive. And the students then weren't getting the best experience either. So it was very disjointed. So communications were particularly bad at the time for staff and for students. And the whole learning experience, I think, suffered from the fact that the college took the benefit of the furlough scheme as well as they did, I think is the best way to put it.
Then after the lockdown, the colleges were told, colleges and schools were both told to kind of reopen up. Obviously, people had been continuing working right through the lockdown, but then there was some campus reopening, some of which took place right at the very start of June, other bits in the middle of June, other bits, you know, not until July. Steve, you were involved in that. What was that like, and what did you kind of experience in terms of what members said to you, what management said to you? What were the sort of issues?
The communication was ongoing, building up to that was really good. I think it was when I first had the opportunity to come back on campus myself and go, oh my God, they've done such a good job. And it was above my expectations of what I was looking for. Because of the time that it was coming along, there was a lot of courses where people had, we'd already had the information that we were just going to use predicted grades for a lot of stuff. So the main concern was the areas like motor vehicle, where it's not a case of watching a video of somebody putting a wheel on a car. They've got to be seen to do it because of the safety aspect, and making sure things like that were all in place. And there was a lot of discussion around how that would take place within them individual teams. That I never had anybody knocking on my door, because they were quite happy with how well that was going. And I think it was around this time that I felt, and me and Graham were getting together quite a lot online to really share concerns and any issues and things, that so we could present it to management and health and safety. But we found that it was the preparation for enrolment really had started to become the big thing around the June-July time.
One of the well-documented aspects of the lockdown is the impact that it had on education, learners, and those in particular who were doing exams. Now, in further education, that's not just GCSEs and A-levels, it's BTECs and the whole myriad of qualifications which further education colleges can offer. Now, undoubtedly, that had an impact on students, but one of the less documented aspects is the impact that it had on staff and what they were having to do, not just in the run-up to qualifications, but also when the qualifications themselves were released. It's well known the impact that it had on students who wanted to go to university. I asked Seamus about his experience as a UCU representative and what he'd found when he'd been talking to members who were involved in exam prediction and the fiasco that followed.
Although it didn't affect us in our school so much, because our exams are different, I do a lot of cases with members throughout all the campuses. And one of the big worries for them was when the awarding bodies were looking for results and they'd been furloughed, they were being told by management as well, it's okay, you can just do this part of your job and just get the results ready and get them into us. And it put a lot of pressure on our members, both psychologically and they were worried essentially about their job and about if they were going to be breaking the law. And we were told that if we did, if we did whilst on furlough any work, then we were going to be held liable for any funds that were paid. So this was something that I was contacted a lot about around the exams fiasco time.
We hope that you're enjoying listening to this show, talking about further education in 2020 and what we can expect in 2021. Please don't forget to like, favourite or subscribe to this podcast in whichever podcast provider you use. That way, you will never miss an episode. You can find us online at anchor.fm/UCU-Northern-Region. And we're available in pretty much any podcast app. Now, back to the show. Now, when we got through what we might call the exam results fiasco in the middle and the end of August, attention turned to the return to campus in September 2020 as a new autumn term beckoned. Now, our union reps were very heavily involved in risk assessments and discussions with management right across the region and across the country. The government had put out guidance about a September reopening, and UCU had also produced a number of guidance and webinars for how our representatives needed to engage with management to try and make sure that campuses were COVID secure. I asked Neil, first of all, about his experience of working with management and of making sure that members were felt as secure and safe as they returned to campus and learners also began to come back.
I think dealing with management was relatively straightforward on the whole, because it wasn't ever an adversarial position. You know, it really, really did feel like we were all in this together and all trying to make the best of it. So our health and safety rep was involved in the process of kind of drafting and approving health and safety risk assessments. We were kept updated on measures that were being taken through the college to make them as COVID safe as possible. You know, the one-way systems, the hand sanitizers, the rearranging of rooms and things like that. So, you know, on that side of things, it was all positive. We had several meetings over the course of the summer with the exec team, where we were able to bring up any issues that either members had raised or that, you know, that we thought were relevant at the time. And as we moved towards September, you know, those meetings became a little bit more frequent, which was good, because obviously, you know, amongst the membership, there was a huge amount of concern about coming back into college on the one hand, and on the other hand, having, you know, a full cohort of students in. And that's when, you know, through the curriculum planning process, you know, identifying opportunities to do more online work with students, you know, started to discuss that kind of thing as well.
Now, with the return to campuses and the return of face-to-face teaching, a number of institutions were looking at different ways they could try and make their campuses as COVID-safe as possible. Social distancing, face coverings, having different bubbles and zones. These were the types of things that our reps were having to deal with and trying to negotiate and consult over to try and get the best deal possible for our members and to make them feel as safe as possible. This would include things like ventilation, and also the local lockdown in some areas of the Northeast, and then the national lockdown. In spite of this, further education colleges continue to teach. Face coverings became an issue in some areas, and in some places, a number of exemptions for face coverings proved difficult between staff and students. Now, Seamus, if I turn to you, because you've got some experience of this, can you tell us about how your institution dealt with these issues and how you and members found it and what you kind of think about the next steps might be?
Yeah, they looked at it in, I guess, a bit of an original way in some ways. If a student has a medical exemption or some kind of medical exemption, they were given a wristband. So if they were in an orange wristband, it meant that they didn't need to wear a mask, or that they couldn't wear a mask, I guess. But we found that in one of the campuses in particular, the students were just telling staff that they couldn't wear a mask. There was no proof being given. So you essentially had loads of students walking around with armbands on but no masks. They've changed it now, so it's not armbands anymore. It's going to be lanyards. So they're readily apparent. It's readily visible to people. But then they're leaving it up to the tutors to give out the and lecturers to give out the lanyards, which I think is not the best idea. I do think they should have some kind of proof. Otherwise, we just end up with students. It becomes a badge of honour then with the student, of course. And what we've got then is we've got a badge of honour not to wear it, of course. We've got the zones, which our college has been broken up into different zones. So we've got a blue zone, an orange zone, and so on. And you're not supposed to cross zones. And when we first started it, the theory of it was very good. And for the first couple of weeks, probably, it worked quite well. But then you had students which were using our area as a shortcut because the sports fields are quite near where we are. So they used to be walking through without masks and stuff, and there was a lot of complaints put in. And then there was complaints from students that the staff were being aggressive. So I believe there was a student complained because one of the staff members asked him to put on a mask and had pointed at his face when he'd done so. And the student said he perceived this to be aggression, and the lecturer then had to apologise to the student afterwards for being aggressive. And I think when we look at issues like that, it meant that the lecturers then weren't really going to put themselves forward to confront any students because we're afraid of getting reprimanded because of it. And what we've got now coming into the end of November, really, and up to now, is students who are walking around without masks quite a lot. In our part of the school, most of our students are either employed or they're about to be employed by a sponsorship company. So they tend to be very good. We don't tend to have many issues. But once we go outside of our own area, there's a very small minority of students who are wearing masks. The issue with bubbles as well, we set up these bubbles, or the college set up bubbles, where we were supposed to keep students in a bubble and even up to a year. So you might have 100 students in a bubble. But once we went through the redundancy phase, of course, just before the summer, as we do every year, and the staff were cut down quite a bit. And then when some of them were on furlough still, it became an issue, because when we have to socially distance in a room, there was some classes which had to be split. So you might have two lecturers needed to cover their course, and then we're short on lectures because lectures have been let go, or we took a reduction to a 0.8 contract in ours. So it meant we were on a 4-day week. So most of us, or certainly a majority of us, couldn't take a 4-day week. We had to still work the 5 days and get the days off later on. So it became a growing issue, I guess. There was a lot more to it than just creating a bubble or creating a zone. It created a lot more issues, I think, than it really fixed. If it was enforced properly, I think it's a great idea. I think theoretically it's fantastic. But I think if you're going to be getting relaxed with it, which is what we've done, I think there's no point in actually doing it. We've got an issue now, of course, because we have to keep windows and doors open in the winter for COVID. There's cold issues now as well. So we've got students not turning up to class because it's too cold in the classes. It doesn't help that on one of the campuses a boiler broke as well, which means it's extra cold over there. So we've got extra issues from COVID that we weren't expecting to see.
So we're talking in this podcast to a number of our UCU representatives across the Northern region. We're talking to Seamus, Neil and Steve about the coronavirus pandemic and how Further Education has responded to it. We're joined now by Emma. Welcome to the podcast, Emma. We're going to talk a bit more about 2020, and then we're going to look at the future and what we might expect in 2021. Emma, if we just turn to you for 1 minute, can you just talk about what happened at your college from September and how the kind of return to campuses worked for you and students and everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it has been or was a fairly positive experience. So when we returned in September, we'd previously been around the college before it reopened to look at their social distancing, so how classrooms had been laid out, what policies they're taking in terms of one-way systems. And it was really good, and that has remained consistently good up until now. Once we actually got back in September, there were a few teething problems that we noticed that we're able to deal with. So, for example, all the rooms have a room capacity on them, but we found out it wasn't consistent. So sometimes it included the member of staff and sometimes it didn't. So depending on who'd done which building, the room capacity either said for students and staff or it just had students. So that created some confusion, but we got that rectified. And then it was a consistent approach from there where the room capacity means staff and students.
And can you just talk about the learning, Emma, from your point of view? What kind of, has it been a blended approach or has it been, you know, face-to-face all the time? What's been the approach of the college to this?
So the college's approach has been a blended learning model. And it's varied from department to department because we're a massive college, loads of different sections, and how much has been online and how much has been on site is sort of being dictated by what that department wanted, how many students they had, how often they could get students in. So it has been a very blended approach. In January, that's going to change and there is going to be more face-to-face delivery. So the blended model has worked quite well and it's allowed staff to work at home some of the time. So that's, you know, allowed for flexibility for childcare issues, for having to travel into college for clinically vulnerable staff who can stay at home and work. But it has created workload problems. An example would be where half your class are at home learning online and you're doing face-to-face delivery in college. So staff have had to prepare face-to-face resources and online resources. And the extra workload's not really being acknowledged by the college to any great degree. So that's definitely been one downfall of it.
Seamus, I'll come to you. Can you just talk to us about the experiences that you've had as a union rep? Because I know the membership of your branch has been growing over the last few months.
So our membership is growing. So the union's growing. So that's a positive out of it. People have really embraced the online teaching as well. They've done a fantastic job. The work that members have done and staff have done outside of the college is just fantastic, training themselves up and how to use it. The problem with that is I think we're trying to move towards that a bit more. And it's okay if the people who you're teaching have chosen to do it. I think when you're supposed to be in class, but you move to an online forum, then the students tend to relax because they're at home. Whereas if they've chosen to do it online, it's a bit of a different mindset. And I think that creates more workload and more pressure for lecturers. Whereas management have the idea that lecturers are having it easier because they're sitting at home teaching. And it's getting kind of around that, getting them to understand that that's not actually what's happening here. So I think we're going to have a lot more cases of stress, workload stuff as a union, certainly on a local scale. On a national scale, we're seeing a change in how we're delivering. So I think that's going to have a big effect on membership and how people kind of engage with students and engage with the union. So yeah, hopefully positive. I'm hoping it's positive. It's always good to look in the glass half full.
I think really, in regards to the union, it's been a difficult year this year because, you know, communication with members has been, you know, essentially via email. We haven't had a single meeting pretty much all year where people can actually turn up in person. So I think it's about kind of how we communicate with our members, and we need to be communicating much more frequently, if only via email, keeping people involved, responding quickly to issues and updating members on the basis of that. So I think for a union, it is about having that fundamental kind of communication strategy that's going to see us through these times until we can get back to something that's a little bit more kind of face to face. The main thing that's going to come up as we get into 2021 is going to be issues around workload. It is going to be issues about, you know, how do we do online learning better, or, you know, have better training, better facilities, that kind of thing. I think we're still operating on a, you know, a bit of a suck it and see basis at the moment. Nobody's had, as far as I'm aware, any sort of real amount of training in online learning. We don't really know the expectations. I wouldn't particularly enjoy being observed in an online lesson because, again, you know, the I have IT students, and for one reason or another, they won't switch the cameras on. They're quite happy to talk over text chat, but saying things out loud and switching the cameras on is an absolute no-no for them. So there's all sorts of challenges being thrown up. I do think it's really important to develop the online stuff, but I think it's going to have to be supported in a much better way than it is now.
When we'd gone all COVID, I tried to do bi-weekly branch meetings, and they were way better attended online than they ever are in college. So
yeah,
that's something that I'm possibly going to be taking forward.
So I'd like to echo that as well. We have had better turnout online in our online membership meetings than we ever had when we meet in person. And also the other thing that I just wanted to say about Niels, you're right about the online stuff. We've decided that, I was talking to our head of school in our department, that when we are timetabling them, we're going to have to give them more tutorial lessons to make sure that they're actually completing work.
Yes.
And to make sure that the students are engaging properly. So it's going to create more hours, really, that we're going to have to engage with the students, which will keep our hours up, which isn't a bad thing. But it means it becomes a little bit easier for the students if they think, well, I've got 4 hours to do it rather than 2 hours. So they become a little bit more relaxed. But we can see another way around it, where we're going to make sure that they've completed what they have to complete. I'm going to keep up to up to the timeline as it's set out at the start of the year.
Okay, and if we look at 2021 and what's going to happen in the future, Emma, if I just come to you on this, what are the issues that you think are going to be affecting colleges, yourself, our members? What are the kind of issues that are coming up?
So I think our big one is going to be there's a greater focus on students returning to site, so they all have to be on campus at least once a week, and if possible, more. So we're moving away from online delivery, but they have committed to keeping the 2 meter distancing for staff and 1 meter distancing for students. So that's a positive. However, I do think some health and safety issues could arise out of there. So we've looked at some rooms and the capacity isn't correct. So the 2 meter zone isn't actually a 2 meter zone from students at the front. The college have said that's fine and it'll be rectified, but I think it's going to be checking consistently that doesn't change and making sure that we don't miss any rooms where that isn't happening and that members speak up if they're in that situation. And then my other sort of worry around that is that more vulnerable staff are going to be put at greater risk. There is allowances that say, again, if they're highly vulnerable, they should work at home where they can, or they should travel off peak, or they should be in one room and not moving around the college. But again, with the size of the college, it's hoping that members come forward and say where there's an issue, because they are entitled to a risk assessment. They are entitled to occupational health referrals if it's deemed necessary. But we know that that's not happening consistently because members do keep coming forward every now and then and saying it's not happening. And I imagine there are members who are affected by this who just haven't said anything, either because they don't want to, because they're worried, or they don't know their entitlement, possibly.
Hi, Seamus. I want to come to you because I want to ask you about the proposed testing for COVID-19 taking place in January. The government this week, you know, the very last week of term, has announced that schools and colleges can start mass testing of both staff and students. Obviously, there's a number of concerns and questions about that. And I know that at your college, they've emailed out about it, asking for people to volunteer and give a few kind of bits of information about what it might actually involve. I mean, one of the things that I've been thinking about this is that if this is so important, it does need to be something which is led by the people at the top of the organisation. And if staff are asked to be involved at all of this, first of all, it needs to be done on a voluntary basis. And secondly, we need to be clear exactly what it is that we're being asked. And I suppose, thirdly, there needs to be a very clear kind of rollout of the communications of this and
why it's taking place and what it means for staff, students, and the whole college community. I just wondered if you had any kind of take on that, if you thought that was the kind of right things that we should be arguing.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. I was thinking something similar myself, as well as the fact that the training that we're going to be getting, if we are going to be volunteering for that position, needs to be robust. We need to make sure that people aren't going to make mistakes with this. It's too serious a thing to do. So, yeah, I fully support us doing it, but it has to be done in the right way. And I think you're right. It needs to be led from the top.
Emma, if I can ask you about what's happening at your college and the position that you and Unison have taken on the issue around testing in January. I'm just looking at what Joe Grady, the General Secretary of UCU, has said. So there was a press release out this week where Joe Grady said, "We have concerns about the reliability of these tests. The results cannot be relied upon as a basis to reopen college campuses when studies have shown they are often wrong. Government needs to fully fund and resource this testing program. Most colleges have thousands of students. It will be incredibly hard to put everything in place to test all of them by January. And it's unrealistic to expect untrained staff to be able to safely administer the tests." So I just want to come to you, Emma. What's your kind of take on what's going on?
We've got a committed stance with Unison that we've agreed, or this is the stance we'll put to the college, that the testing idea is great, we fully support it, but that it has to be paid people coming in to carry out the testing and not relying on volunteers from the college. In fairness to the college, they have not said that's what's happening, but that was our worry, that they might suggest that that does happen.
We hope that you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the podcast produced by the Northern Region of the University and College Union. We're finishing off this episode and producing it on the 18th of December, which is the last Friday of term for most in further education colleges across the region and indeed across the UK. Now, this week the government has decided to surprise schools and colleges with announcements about January. There is an announcement about staggered starts in January, as well as testing in secondary schools and colleges starting in January 2021. Now, how they are going to be rolled out, we have yet to see. But please make sure that you contact your union rep for further information. And if you're a union rep listening to this podcast and you need some help from the regional office, please do get in touch with us. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and we've got more episodes coming in 2021. All the best for the festive season and a very happy new year.